Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of Refs Roundup. It's great to be back in the studio to chat about the weekend's games and what's been happening in the world of refereeing. And a very lovely welcome to my favourite referee and favourite husband, Gavin Badger. Hello, Gavin.
Hey, Case, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
That always gets me every week.
So tell me a bit about weekend. It was pretty busy, and we'll go into that a bit later. So it's been a pretty big week for referees across the board, and we've dealt with a few issues this week which have been a bit out of the box, not a normal sort of thing that we'll deal with in terms of decisions, a bit of a procedural thing. But let's push that aside because we'll get onto that a bit later. Just tell me a bit about the weekend and what you got out of this weekend's football.
Up in Townsville for the weekend, so had the game up there, and it was a pretty close and tight game. So that was fun, apart from the last 10 minutes. But, yeah, like you said, we'll get into that. Apart from that, for me, you know, Greg Inglis retiring through the week is pretty big news in the game. We got, you know, a superstar of the game, and not only for what he does on the field, but what he does off the field for his communities as well. So Greg's going to be a big loss on field, but I think, you know, the next chapter of his life is probably going to be just as exciting and just as rewarding for him and those around him. So looking forward to see what that brings. Footy-wise, there were some really tight games, and there was a few blowouts, and, you know, the blowout with the Dragons-Bulldogs game, I don't think too many people were expecting that, probably unless you're in the St. George camp, who probably could see something like that coming, knowing how they would have been training and the likes. But, yeah, I was expecting that to be a really tight, tough, you know, down to the wire game, and Dragons blew them off the park.
Yeah, absolutely. I was up in Newcastle for the Newcastle Manly game, and it was a bit of a interesting game. We sort of at the end of it, and on Monday when we're doing our video review, we sort of were saying it was almost like three games in one. Where the start of the game, the first 20 minutes, it just looked like Manly were just going to roll through them, and they had. They really had them on the back foot, and they scored a few early tries, and we thought we might be in for a bit of a long night there. But, you know, Newcastle sort of got back in the grind with them, and there was a stage where we thought that they were going to come back over the top. And then we had an incident there with a sin bin with Adam Fanua-Blake, an injury with Aidan Guerra, and a few other bits and pieces where it became a really tough game to referee at stages. So, yeah, it went from one team dominating to a bit of a grind to that tough football where you're trying to manage players' emotions and trying to, as a group, as a team, the four of us, along with the match day coach, trying to get through a game which had a lot of feeling in it, along with nearly 22,000 people at the ground. And we say, like, Newcastle is one of those grounds that seems to get really loud. You know, they've always got the last couple of seasons, they've always had decent crowds there, which adds to that. But something about the stadium seems to hold that noise in as well. So it's quite enjoyable to be a part of.
Yeah. And for me, you also look at the games over the weekend. The game that probably didn't look like it was going to be the most exciting or one of the great games of the weekend turned out to be the Titans-Panthers game. You know, you had a close scoreline. You had Titans getting their first win of the season against a really good Penrith side who played well. It was the quality of the game was right up there. And the stats sort of show that. And, you know, it's a high completion rate game, and it's a reasonably quick around the ruck. So, you know, a game that not a lot of people, you know, would have expected to be the highlight of the weekend turned out to be, you know, a bit of a cracking game of footy.
Yeah, that's right. It was really exciting to watch on TV. It came across really well. And like you said, completion rate-wise and speed of play, the balls and all of and errors were really low. And then the difference there, you had Titans getting up by 6 points. And you look at their tackle breaks compared to Penrith, and that's what really sort of stood out to me. You see their, some of their big fellas, you know, getting through the line and a few late offloads and stuff like that as well, getting an arm free to pop that ball out really made a difference, which can make it hard with the referees as well. I know we've spoken about in previous episodes with the assist referee not being able to push up or not being able to, and the head referee not being able to call the tackle straight away because it always looks like someone might offload the ball. And if someone's in that sort of upright position, trying to decide when to call held and when to play on, which can always make things, you know, more difficult.
Yeah, it does. And just quickly, you know, the other couple of games there, the Parramatta being held scoreless by Canberra is something that, you know, I don't think Parramatta are expecting with what they have in attack this year, that they would be held scoreless at all in any games this year. And the fact that Canberra's defence can do that, and the talk all week has been their English connection at Canberra, and they seem to be able to draw those players over here and get the best out of them. And
Yesterday in our team meeting, the guys who refereed that game were talking about how Canberra were attacking in defence.
Yeah, they were really winning that ruck when they were defending, weren't they?
Yeah, so it's like they were saying that was as much as, you know, their attack when they had the ball was obviously good. They were talking about how they were really gaining momentum through their defence, and it's that English pack that were, you know, really the main contributors to that, really dominating.
Yeah, and the other one, the Brisbane West Tigers game up in Brisbane, and we talk about it all the time, that those games up there, like, no matter who plays in Brisbane, they just seem to be quick. And you look at the ruck speeds in that one, and it's the quickest one of the weekend. And it's just, Suncorp Stadium produces quick, fast-flowing footy, and, yeah, that one went down to the wire and was a cracking game of football as well.
Yeah. With the talking about speeds of games, we'll have a little look at the GPS data for this week.
A nice segue.
I'm getting used to this gig. Our marathon runner this week is Jerry Sutton. He was in the assist referee role in that Dragons and Bulldogs game, and hit just under 12 kilometres, so 11.89 kilometres in that game. So in a game which was a blowout sort of scoreline, that 40-4. It's not as often that we get those high meters from the assist ref, which is quite just quite different to see.
There's a lot of 100-meter runs from one end of the game back behind the post.
Yeah.
No, but that's a testament to Jerry as well in that game, because Jerry was pushed back into the assist role off, you know, a performance the week before, and you know, we talk about, you know, working hard for your mate in our squad, and obviously Jerry's gone out there running with Ash Klein and worked really hard to make sure that he was, you know, doing the role the way it was meant to be done. And to rack up nearly 12K shows how hard Jerry's worked in that game.
Yeah.
Like you say, considering we had a lot of tries, so you have a lot of stoppages.
There's a lot of downtime
where you're not running. So when he was going for it. That's a real testament to Jerry's character and attitude towards the role that he had.
Yeah, that's right. Our urgency award this week went to Liam Kennedy, who was the touch judge in that game as well. And he clicked 130 times. He hit those high Axel D cells, which is... Yeah, massive number, isn't it?
He ain't a little fella either, Liam. So he's moving that body around. It's you can imagine the forces of stops there when we talk about his momentum and his body moving and changing direction. So it actually is quite significant for Liam to win that, because, you know, he is a bigger body, you know, a bigger guy, and the way he's been able to move and do that, it shows that he's going all right.
I think it's interesting to sort of point out that our touch judges are getting these awards, like the Gazelle and the Urgency awards. You know, they've been getting them quite a few times this year. So just to the general public and the refereeing community to sort of understand how physically taxing the touch judge role is. You hear a lot of people sort of go, oh, what do touch judges do? Or, you know, they put their flag up when someone goes out. But there's so much to the touch judge role that people don't understand, and particularly in their movement patterns. And it is quite demanding. A lot of short, sharp movements from side to side. I know, you know, with my body, with my hip and ankle issues, how much strain that does put on.
Will you say that your body is a lot worse off the next day after running a touchline than it is when you referee? Yeah. So the impact that it has and the movement patterns are so different and unique to our sport because of how hard you have to run sideways and turn off and, you know, where you're not, you know, lateral, straight up and down running. So
yeah, and that's exactly right. I find as much as the kilometres are lower, so you're going, you know, 8-ish, 8.5 sort of k's on the touchline. The actual impact on, or I find the impact on my body is much higher on the touchline.
I look at it as more violent movements.
Yeah,
if that makes sense. You know, they're not soft. You know, slow, they're violent. It's get up off the line really quick, adjust, because, you know, getting into the intricacies of the role, you know, it's working hard off every 10 metres, then adjusting to what the player's doing. So you might have to run a top speed for 5 metres and turn and go at top speed the opposite direction within a fraction of a second. So that's a violent jerk on the body.
And you could be doing that for a long time in the game, almost for no result in terms of that a decision didn't happen, but the one time that you're not in line with us in the exact spot that you're meant to be is when you get burnt by something, when, you know, you miss a pass or an on or offside kick chaser or a knock on, whatever it might be. The one time you're not in position is the time you get burnt by it. So we do everything we can to make sure that we are in that position, so that we're getting those decisions right and we can, you know, assist the referees as best as possible.
Yeah, well, we talk about as a group, whether it be refereeing, whether it be on the touchline, that when we make our errors and our big errors, they generally come from either communication or positioning. You know, either our communication let us down or our positioning let us down. So I have a bit of a saying around that when I'm coaching young referees. I say, if you're in best position, you make decisions. If you're not, you're having a guess.
Yeah.
You know, you have an educated guesses, but you're guessing. But when you're in position, you're actually making a decision. Sometimes we get them wrong still from there, but at least you're making a decision.
Yeah. Good starting point from being in that right position.
Exactly right.
Our last award of the week, Gazelle of the Week, goes to Todd Smith as the touch judge. I think this is something I think Todd would retire very happily on this award. He hit just under 30 kilometres an hour, so 29.5 kilometres an hour as the touch judge in the Cronulla and Roosters game. So again, a touch judge winning that award. So getting into a bit of the intricacies of the touch judge role again, a lot of the times when there is a what we call a two-pass shift and then into a break, or it could be a dummy half scoot, any sort of line break, it is the touch judge's role to get motoring as quickly as possible downfield to stay in line for passes, because a lot of the times the referees get checked or they have to stop and let play go past them, or the referees can't run as a direct route as fast as they can because there might be defenders or attackers coming into those lines. So you might have to sort of prop, stop, go, slow down, speed up, whereas on the touchline, you can just go.
You just go. You got no one in the way. You don't have to worry about those defenders coming across. And you'll notice whenever there is a break, you'll notice the referee will always have a look.
Yeah,
it's a skill set that we have. And we don't
to
even
to have a scan for attackers.
We
or defenders.
Don't even realise we do it a lot of the time. But it's just the first thing we do is have a look to see where the defenders are coming from. If there's no defenders coming from any direction, yeah, we can go and we can get ourselves in on with passes. But yeah, as soon as we see, you know, wingers, centres, whatever coming from weird angles to, you know, defend, we have to sort of stop, let them go. And then what happens when we stop? Yeah, we're 10 metres behind. So we're not in position to call those passes. So that's where the touch judges get on their bike and motor and get there. And most times we have someone in position to do it. And that's testament to those guys. And this shows with Toddy running almost 30 k's an hour.
Yeah. As you say, how much you rely on your touch judges, you know, to get those sorts of decisions. So lots of things that when people are watching the game, whether it's at the game or, you know, watching it on TV, where you don't realise where those decisions are coming from. And so many times they can be coming from the touchline.
Yeah, a lot of the big calls do come from them.
So we'll get into now what was the big talking point of the weekend, happened to be the game that you were on.
Yep.
So we've got quite a bit to sort of talk about in regards to this. It's actually it's quite it could be quite a tough conversation for yourself, for what you've been through this week. So I guess I really appreciate that you're willing to talk about this on the podcast today and share with the audience, I guess, the week that you've been through. So as you know, most rugby league fans would know, we had an incident in North Queensland where two players were down injured after a collision from a kick contest.
Yeah.
So we were left with two, what we call in inverted commas, dead bodies on the ground, two people left behind play as Melbourne got the ball. I think Josh Adokar got the ball, you know, played the ball and play moved on down the field. So I guess what we'll start with is talk through what our processes are, what we've sort of been instructed to do, or what we're doing in terms of when players are down injured. So generally the process is...
So what we've looked at doing this year, and it's not a change in what we've done, it's just being able to allow us to do things that have always been there. So where possible, we want the game to continue. So you've noticed we've tried, if players are injured and it's cramp and stuff like that, we'll just take the ball off them, move the game infield and continue to play, which for a long time we sort of haven't really taken that option. We've just sort of, okay, the player's injured, let's just stop and work on that. So we've got that. We've also got, if there are players down, if there's a player down and he's outside the game and in no chance that they can be further injured or cause any drama to the game, we'll try and play on. And then if the doctor needs to go on the field. There's processes around that for trainers to run to report to touch judges and touch judges then to alert the referee.
So I'll just quickly touch on that. So that's what the process is, that usually it's the doctor doesn't just come on the field straight away. You know, the trainers come on and assess the player or sort of see what's going on. And if they need the game to be stopped, the process is for them to go to the touch judge and tell the touch judge, who then, with our comms gear, can just say, hey, Badge, stop the game. You know, the trainers ask for the game to be stopped. So first of all, why is that the process? Why isn't it just for the trainer to wave their hand in the air or for the trainer to go to the referee on the field? Why do we have the process of the trainer going to the touch judge?
Yeah, well, there's a couple of factors in it. Firstly is then, if we've just got people waving their hands in the air, they could be waving to the sideline that, you know, the player's okay.
Mm.
And all of a sudden we see a hand up in the air waving and we blow time off and it might be a cramp. It might, yeah. So there's the, you know, non-verbal communication stuff around it. So we need to make sure that, you know, the game is being stopped when it needs to be. The reason we can't have the trainer run to the referee.
So before you go to that, also a trainer just putting their hand in the air when play's moved downfield,
what are you
looking at as the referee?
Yeah, well,
you're not looking at the trainer down in the back. You're concentrating on play. Yeah. So there's also a risk of, if that was the process, there's high risk of you not seeing it.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. And yeah, the reason we can't have a trainer run at the referee is because we've got play in motion and all of a sudden we've got a trainer in the referee's face. There might be a decision that needs to be made and we miss that because the trainer may get in the way of play.
Yeah.
You know, so we just can't have that. So a couple of years ago, we sort of looked at, okay, this is the best process to go down. Because the trainer can verbally tell the touch judge the game needs to be stopped. The touch judge can then verbally tell the referee the game and it gets stopped. We've also got a match day coach up in the box who can oversee the whole field as well, and he can verbally come in and say, this game needs to be stopped.
Yeah. So it doesn't need to be the trainer who went out to assess the player. So say the orange shirt trainer is assessing the player who's, you know, 40 metres from the touchline. That trainer can call out to the blue trainer. I'm just picking a
They can have a signal or whatever.
Yeah, they can have a signal, and then that trainer is closer to the touch judge and can say, hey, we need the game stopped. So it's not like that trainer has to leave the player down on the ground injured and go chasing the touch judge down the field.
And all these processes, they work in a perfect world.
Mm.
In a perfect world, that's what we expect to happen. Rugby league,
not a perfect world.
Helter-skelter of the field, it's not a perfect world. So there are going to be situations that are outside the norm, and unfortunately for Grant and I this weekend, we had one.
That's what happened.
We had one, yes.
So this is something that we'd never really talked about before as a group because we just hadn't had it. We hadn't had two players from the same team go down with pretty bad injuries, particularly for one of them, and they also both happened to be on the defending team, which meant that they were playing with 11 people, 10 in the line with the fullback. So talk about not being in a perfect world. This is like almost for us a worst case scenario.
Yeah, and I just want to reiterate on the other scenarios. At any stage, if we think or deem there's a serious injury, we'll stop the game straight away.
Yeah.
So we see don't worry about any other processes.
So we see that most of the time with head clashes. Yes. So if we see a player who looks like they've been concussed, they've been knocked out, they're laying on the ground, and we've all had to do the there's a online HIA module that we all had to do as referees.
Yeah, yep.
So we get a bit of
knowledge. So we can identify concussions.
Yeah, so we can sort of identify. Yep, we're not doctors, but we can identify when a player goes into, you know, when they stiffen up, when eyes roll back, when they don't protect themselves, when they fall, a bunch of those sorts of things, so that we can be better prepared to make those judgments. But generally what we've been judging on is those head injuries. It hasn't been things like arm injuries, limb injuries, stuff like that.
Yeah. And that was one of the questions asked of both Grant and I post-game was, did you have any thought that this may have been a head clash as it happened? And at this one we didn't. So, and if we did, we would have stopped the game.
Yeah.
And that's one of the, as referees, if we feel there is a serious injury, we will stop the game.
Yeah.
And that's probably for myself and Grant this weekend, knowing the seriousness of Nene's injury, you know, and in hindsight, you know, we would have loved to have been able to stop that game to make sure that he got the treatment he needed straight away.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, in this situation, we had no idea of the seriousness
of the injury
straight away.
So let's talk through that then. So we were in a stage of the game where we were in what we call one ref mode.
Yes.
Where the head referee, so in this game it was Grant Atkins, was in the pocket position. So just because a referee is on the 10 metres doesn't mean that they're the controlling referee, that they're the head referee at the time. So Grant was in the pocket position.
Yep.
You were on the 10 metres.
Yep.
But the controlling ref, so in one ref mode, he was the one who's identifying the tackle, you know, calling Pell.
He's in control of the game.
Yep. If a penalty needs to be blown, he's the one blowing the whistle.
Yep.
You're effectively on the 10 metres calling players back, hold, go, and assisting with decisions at that stage. Okay, so the kick contest happens, the collision occurs. Talk through it for us.
Yeah, so as it happens, we do communicate, you know, that there is an injury there, and more or less we'll see what happens. We know we've got players down. We don't know the seriousness. We don't. At that stage, there were sort of three players. There was two Cowboys and one
Melbourne player
sort of
thereabouts,
you know, thereabouts around the on the floor. And Grant sort of standing in pretty close proximity has no inkling that Nanae McDonald's got a broken leg.
Mm.
No inkling. Just not sure if it's just a collision injury,
yeah.
You know, just players are slow to get up, which happens all the time. So it's like, okay, let's wait and see what happens. Then the play goes past them and everything's behind us.
Yeah.
Once it's behind us, it's very hard for us to judge what's happened. And Grant actually says, we'll see what the trainers do here.
Yeah.
Unfortunately for us in this situation, at two times during it, trainers do sort of go towards officials at different times because we're so focused and caught up in what we're doing and have an expectation of what the process is going to be, we sort of miss that.
Yeah, so you're on the 10 metres, Grant's near the ruck, and so his focus is on the tackle, the contact, on the ball, making those decisions,
yeah.
You know, caught the normal vocab and stuff to the ruck, so a trainer coming to him, sort of behind him, sort of to the side, that's not his focus because Grant's looking at the ball and at the players in front of him.
Yeah, and it may seem ridiculous to people out there that how could you not know there's someone standing next to you talking to you? But there are occasions through games where things happen and we watch back and we go, I don't even know that happened.
Mm.
Because you're so focused on what you need to be focused on.
Yeah.
And that's our skill set. You know, that's how we block out crowd noise. That's how we block out...
It's actually,
you know,
something we train for.
Yeah, players, you know, yelling at different stages of the game. And you know, so it is a skill set. But in this stage, one of our skills has sort of let us down a little bit. And on that fact as well, I'm on the 10 metres and I've got players sort of remonstrating with me saying, we've got two players. So at that stage as well, you know, once it's two players from the same team that are out, you know, in hindsight, stop the game then. You know, there was an opportunity for us to then, you know, break it all down and say, well, wait up, this is too much of a disadvantage to this team. There's two players from the same team injured. You know, people talk about common sense, and it's easy to talk about common sense post it.
Yeah.
You know, that old common sense would say that you stop the game. But, you know, at the stage when it's happening, all you're thinking about is trying to do the right thing. And we thought the right thing was to get some continuity in play. And as soon as you know, it's the game finishes and we think about it, and I felt disappointed in myself because I thought there's a stage there where I could have said, maybe we should stop this game. Not that I could have blown the whistle to stop it because I wasn't in control. And that's not taking away the fact that I had an opportunity to put it to the team to say...
To ask that question?
Yeah, should we stop this here? Mm. And because I felt under a lot of pressure with the players around me, I had a couple of players around me who were really adamant that this game needed to be stopped. Mm. So, and, you know, I'm sort of more focused on getting them back 10 metres than really having a look at what this situation actually looks like from outside.
Yeah. You know, and at that stage, you're also 30, 40 metres downfield, so you can't see there's two players still... Well, with Nene, he's obviously still down, but you can't see that he's got a broken leg or whatever it is. You just know, okay, it's obviously something because he's still down injured.
Yeah, it's like the longer a player is down,
the more.
And then you know, once we stop the game, we look across and there's multiple people with him at that stage. That's when we sort of look at each other. Yeah, you know, that's when you sort of know. This doesn't look good.
Yeah.
You know, we could have been better here.
And that's a bit of a bind that sometimes officials can get into, where we have processes that we're meant to follow, and we know that we always say when you stick to your processes, you know,
you're generally okay.
You're generally going to be okay, which makes it really hard when something out of the box like this happens, and you in a, what is really a quick space of time, where a lot of things that people, you know, in the outside world sort of say, oh, it went on for a long time, you know, that sort of 40 seconds or whatever it is. But that's still, when you're doing so many other roles and so many tasks, is still a relatively quick time for us.
Oh, yeah.
And in that time, you've got to weigh up, well, geez, do I stick to what our processes are, or geez, what has happened over there? I actually don't know what's happened. Should I break process? Because then there are other times where if you break process, there are ramifications for that as well.
Of course.
So it's definitely a difficult position to be in. So I know post-game, when I spoke to you, you felt really bad for the players, because we say that as referees, we're just big rugby league fans.
I hate seeing players get injured.
We don't want to see players injured. You know, we're all for player welfare. And as fans of the game, you definitely don't want to see that. So I know that you felt really bad in that sense after the game.
Oh yeah, and like I said, I was just disappointed in just the whole situation.
Mm.
You know, the situation that, you know, we could have been better. Trainers could have been better. Mm. You know, the whole situation was a bit helter-skelter. And yeah, I just felt that we'd let down. See, and the thing is, it was a Friday night game as well. So Friday night for our squad is sort of one of the big games, because you're leading into the weekend. And when you come off and when you have something like that, you know that the rest of the office, like, so every team that has to go after us is now under pressure.
Mm.
They are now under pressure to perform, because we've just now given all the talk back, all those TV shows, all the radio over the weekend, something to talk about us.
Mm.
So that puts a hell of a lot of pressure on my mates that have to go out there Saturday, Sunday and deal with that, knowing that they're under heightened scrutiny now because of, you know, our performance on the Friday night.
So an example of that is that I'm then on the next day in Newcastle, and I was driving to the game with the other touch judge, with Mark Bowen, and we were talking about it and saying, geez, what do we do if we get that incident? Are we stopping play? Because we sort of hadn't known yet, like, geez, do we break that process? But then we spoke about, well, yeah, we always had the ability to stop it for serious injury, but okay, how do we have better ways to manage this where we can know that it's a serious injury when something happens behind us? So you talk about, like, then pressure that it puts on the rest of the group to perform. It also puts that other pressure of going, geez, what happens if something similar happens? Which in our game, late in the game, Aiden Guerra goes down quite close to me on the touchline, and I hear him sort of scream as he goes down, but play moves on. And then there's a handover down about 10 metres out from the goal line, and I say to the referees, Aiden Guerra is still down. They actually ask me, is it serious? And you talk about sometimes you don't hear things. I did not hear them ask me that.
Yeah.
And then when the ball's played, we then have the trainer ask for the game to be stopped. So we were thankfully we were able to follow that process, and Aiden was quite badly injured as well, which again was unfortunate to see. All right, so then talk us through what happens from there. So obviously, you know, we have, you know, Bernie Sutton, the head coach, contacts you guys. You have your debrief and appointments come out for this week. So talk through all of that from your perspective.
Yeah, so I get home Saturday afternoon from obviously from flying out of Townsville Saturday morning. And, yeah, I get a phone call from Bernie, and Bernie sort of goes through what went on in the game and asks our opinion of why we did certain things. And the thing about that is to have your coach ring you, and whether it's going to be a good or a bad phone call, just to know that, you know, you get it done, it's over and done with. You know what I mean? So I'm not stewing on it until in the past. There'd be times where you had no communication post your game until Monday when we went back in the office, and sort of your whole weekend's, you know, a bit stressful because you're not sure whether, firstly, you know, your decisions and stuff are right and your processes are right, and whether you're going to be in first grade or not the next week. So you got a whole weekend where you're stewing it, where, you know, you deal with it pretty quickly. And we knew pretty quickly that, you know, this was an issue, and you know, we were under a bit of fire for it. And we knew that pretty straight away. Well, we sort of had an inkling straight after the game anyway. We sort of, when we have our conversations about how we thought we went. But to be sort of told straight away and know where you're at straight away just takes a lot of the stress out of the weekend, so I can sort of go about my weekend and just know that, yep, it is what it is, you know. Other people will make decisions on what we do next week, but at least we know that, you know, where we stand.
Yep.
So that part of it was really good to get that done Saturday night, virtually, you know, not long after I'd landed in Sydney, and so to know they go, okay, I don't have to worry about it. Yep. Decision's been made.
Yep.
Move on.
So then, and then on a Monday, you then go into debrief for the game, you know, which we all do on a Monday. You sit through that, and it's the normal process of let's pick apart the game, let's see what we did well, what we didn't do well, and obviously that would have been a talking point during the debrief.
Yep.
Then you come out of debrief, and this is where your week sort of goes downhill.
Yeah, so post the debrief, obviously we go through the decisions in the game and all the other stuff. And obviously this week for us, a big part of our debrief was around processes and how we could do this. And then a big part of it is then how we take what happened to us in that game and then bring it to the rest of the squad that afternoon in a team meeting.
Yeah.
And how, as a group, we can be better.
And how we can learn from
how
it.
We can learn.
So on a Monday, we call that our learning points.
Our learning
meeting.
Points in the afternoon. So one of the big learning points out of our game for the squad was obviously this incident. It's how we deal with it, how you deal with it, you know, post the game, like during the game, after, because we got some really aggrieved players, and then, you know, we've got to have some interaction with captains and stuff like that. So how we deal with that, and then how we deal with the post stuff. And then, post that, you then get the grab from the coach saying, oh, I need to see you in my office, let's have a chat. And generally, if they're on a Monday afternoon, they're not good ones. they're generally not going to call you in office to tell you you're still in first grade.
It's a long walk down that hallway to Bernie's office.
And it's generally the conversation of, unfortunately for you this week, you're not going to be appointed to first grade. And that's the conversation I got.
Yeah. Okay. So you got told you weren't going to be appointed to first grade, which, and you'd be relegated down to New South Wales Cup for this weekend. So I guess it's definitely something we've not spoken about on this podcast, and not something that really gets spoken about publicly very often, of how difficult that is for a referee to deal with being dropped, and what that what your week then looks like, and what you've got to do to then get back into first grade. So there's been an incident on field. You've been demoted, so people talk about accountability. So we hold ourselves accountable for things that happened. There are ramifications. What does your week then look like, and how do you feel, and how do you deal with that?
Yeah, so the first thing for me, you know, when you get that conversation is, like, this one's a little bit different because I sort of knew it was coming. Mm. Sometimes you don't know they're coming. And for me, there's two reasons why you get dropped back to reserve grade. And one is poor form, and one is decision-based. They're, you know, and this one is a decision-based thing. So it's a lot easier to take when it's like, you know, if it's form, it's a lot harder to get back to first grade. If it's decision-based, it's just around, okay, go back, reassess, and then, you know, you're doing all the right things, you'll be back in first grade. So, yeah, so having it be that scenario makes it a little bit easier. It still hurts like hell. I love refereeing first grade. Mm. It's something that I, you know, look forward to, I enjoy. And it's a privilege, and I love that I get that privilege every week. So that's taken away from me.
So you feel that pain all week. So as much as
I'm still feeling it now.
Yeah, and you'll continue to feel that until whenever you get back. You know, hopefully, whenever you get back into first grade. So just to sort of point out how much it means to referees.
Oh yeah,
that hurts.
Oh, it's Monday afternoon. I felt sick.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. It's like not physically sick, but I was just drained, you know what I mean? Because, firstly, the weekend that I'd had, you know, obviously after the game, there's not much sleep. Generally, we don't sleep a lot well after a game anyway because you're buzzing and stuff like that. And then when you have a big incident, it just replays in your head, how could I have done that better? What could have we done better? So you don't get a lot of sleep over the weekend. And then, the stress of Monday and then feeling like you've let everyone down as well is pretty full on. So, so Monday night wasn't great. I'm lucky that I have you as my support system as well. So, and you understand it. Like a lot of other wives, and that's not you know a bad thing, but a lot of other guys can't go home and then be able to break it down, or even not even say anything. Like you just sort of know, and you know how hard I'm taking it. So it makes it so much easier. So I'm fortunate in that I have a really good support system around me, and a few of the other guys in the squad too. And I had a lot of support from our squad. A lot of phone calls, a lot of text messages. You know, guys are saying, look, you know, if you need a chat, I'm here.
Yeah.
We do that really well as a squad. So, yeah, you go through that and then, you know, you sort of dust yourself off and put your big boy pants back on and go, you know what? Yeah, I'm good and I'll move on.
So then the rest of your week doesn't change too much in terms of Wednesday training. You know, your schedule stays the same, you know, Wednesday through to game day. But this weekend, you know, instead of putting on the jersey with the NRL logo on it, you throw on a New South Wales Cup jersey and you're heading down to Canberra.
Yep.
And refereeing Mounties and I can't remember now off the top of my head.
New Zealand Warriors.
And New Zealand Warriors. So then your process is to go into that game and during the week is to do everything to the same standard as you would if you were in first grade. Prepare the same way, train the same way, have the same positive attitude towards things. Go and referee that game as best as you possibly can and that's all you can do.
Oh, and for me, it doesn't matter what level of football I'm refereeing, I'll referee to the best of my ability. Yeah. I have an obligation to the players out there who've worked as hard as they can work to get the best result. I have an obligation to the two touchers that I have who would have high expectations of me when we go out there. Mm. They expect me to, you know, to help them and, you know, without sounding, you know, that it's hard to say, but I think they expect to be able to learn something from me out of the weekend.
I was just going to say that I know coming through the grades that there was a time where I got to run a touchline for an NRL referee who was dropped down to reserve grade, and it was one of my first handful of games on the touchline in New South Wales Cup, and that was a big moment for me to go, geez, I get to run with this guy. And you see what that person does. You see how they speak to players, how they handle different scenarios, and then in debrief after the game as well. And as a touch judge, you learn so much from that. So there's an opportunity there for the two people who are running with you to learn something from you and for you to sort of help them out as well.
Well, I have a similar situation on the weekend where one of the touch judges is a referee, Nathan Loveday, who is a young referee who I coached 2 years ago in junior rep squad, you know, and one of the values I instilled in all those guys was that, you know, respect and making sure you do the best for the position. So I can't then go out and then, you know, sulk around and not give the best, you know, because it's not fair on him. And I'm certain that he'd be, you know, looking forward to this opportunity this week and thinking, oh, I'm running with Bo, I'll see how he does it and what he does. You know, so, yeah, I have an obligation to that. I have an obligation to myself.
Yeah.
I have an obligation to my coach in Bernie Sutton, you know, to, you know, because I know he has faith in me that I go out there and do the job.
Yeah.
And, you know, I should be able to go out there and do that job.
Yeah. All right, well.
Actually, it's a funny thing. I'm actually looking forward to it.
Yeah.
You know, once you get over the disappointment of not being in first grade, and I look at it as a new challenge for me because I haven't refereed by myself for a long time, you know, and I love that aspect of refereeing. You know, I love I love the camaraderie we have with two refs on the field, and I'm a massive supporter of two referees at the NRL level. I think I just couldn't imagine not having two referees on the field anymore. But I also love the opportunity to go out there and the rawness of refereeing a game of rugby league by yourself, which I don't get to do too often anymore.
Yeah. Well, again, thanks for, you know, being willing to discuss that on this show because, it does take a lot. I know how disappointed, you know, you have been, but I know that you'll, like you said, you'll go out and you'll do the right thing this weekend because, you know, you love the game and you know, you always want to do your best. Busy weekend again for us in terms of you heading down to Canberra. You'll referee the New South Wales Cup game. You'll then be the standby referee for NRL while I duck across to New Zealand.
You're over the ditch.
Over the ditch. So another away trip, which will be good fun. Heading out there for the game against the Cowboys. So we go Friday, come back Sunday. And then the thing that we're probably both really looking forward to after, you know, 3 days away is the opening game at Bankwest Stadium. So we've got a couple of tickets. We'll go out there and enjoy Easter Monday.
We get to be fans on Monday.
We get to just be fans of the game.
Do I get a hot dog?
Oh, for sure. Oh, well, Easter Monday. We won't see each other on Easter, so we'll take a bunch of chocolate out there. That can be our Easter.
We're professional athletes. We don't eat chocolate.
All right. So I hope the audience sort of took something out of that. We were able to explain those processes and sort of explain, you know, what goes on with referees when people get dropped because it's something, as I said, isn't rarely spoken about.
And it's not fun.
No, not at all. So with that, I'd like to encourage everyone once again to join our Facebook and Instagram pages. Our Facebook page is NRL Officiating and our Instagram handle is at NRL Officiating. So give us a follow to keep up to date with what's happening in the world of rugby league officials across the country from under sixes through to the NRL. So thanks for listening to this week's Refs Roundup.